How Sukadev Goswami is answering the questions of Maharaj Prickett one by one, and here he's describing the difference between the Lord and the living entity by describing how the chief of the living entities, the first living entity, the topmost living entity in the universe, Lord Brahma, how he took his birth directly from Lord Gobadakshay Vishnu. And when he took his birth upon the lotus flower, it's interesting how a materialist will say, how is it possible that he could take his birth on a lotus flower? But the same people will believe that the origin of the universe is a black hole that has no existence but unlimited mass, and that doesn't stretch their faith any somehow or another. And where did the black hole come from? Just eternally existed or something. Perhaps the black hole is the navel of the Lord. But in any case, Lord Brahma took his birth from the Shastra. We understand that Lord Brahma took his birth from the lotus flower. And although he was the most intelligent of personalities, he was born with the impetus to create. Yet, he was unable to do that. He did not know how to do it, nor did he know who he was, where he came from. He tried, with all his ability, with his intelligence, to understand this, but he failed. When he heard the transcendental sound vibration emanating, coming from the Lord, from the 16th and 21st letters of the alphabet, tapa, he heard that vibrated twice. Tapa means austerity or penance. So although he could not understand exactly the source of that sound vibration, he understood it was the Lord because there was no one else. And he therefore thought it was best for him to follow the instructions of the Lord. So he began to perform tapasya in bhakti yoga. And by doing that, he pleased the Lord. That means that when Brahma performed the activity, his prime motivation was to please Krishna. It wasn't to perform austerity. It wasn't to create the universe. It was to please Krishna. It wasn't to fulfill his potential as a human being, as a creator. No. It was to please Krishna. That is what bhakti is. So the same activities can be performed on so many different levels. But the highest level that we can perform an activity on is to please Krishna. Just like Arjuna was told by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter to fight. And in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he told them to fight because if you will fight, you cannot lose. Because if you win, you will gain the kingdom of the earth. And if you lose and die, you will attain the heavenly kingdom. So either way, you cannot lose. So therefore, fight. And then later on, the Lord told Brahma, Arjuna, to fight because it was his duty. He was a Kshatriya, a warrior. Fight because it is your duty and be detached from the results. But then finally, in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he said, fight because I am requesting you. Do it to please me, Sarvadamam Pratyaja, Mamekam Sharanam Braja. And then even before that, Krishna tells Arjuna, you will be forced to fight by your own nature. You're a warrior and you're going to have to fight anyway. So there are four different levels just there. One is you're going to have to fight because you're impelled by your nature. Second is fight because you'll gain by it, either the heaven or earthly kingdoms. Third, fight because it's your duty. And fourth, fight for Krishna's pleasure with bhakti. So the same activity of fighting, but different levels of consciousness the fighting can be done upon. So this is the challenge of our life is to raise the level of the consciousness of the activities that we do to Krishna consciousness, bhakti, for Krishna's pleasure, with Krishna at the center of our activities. The activity may be the same, but the consciousness is what is that must be changed if one is going to make his life successful. Consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So Brahma, because he performed the activities and desire to create for Krishna's pleasure, that was the primary motivation. So Krishna was pleased with him. The Lord was pleased with him. So we heard text 8 yesterday. He heard the transcendental vibration from the sky and accepted it as divine. Thus he controlled his mind and senses, and the penances he executed were a great lesson for the living entity. Because as Prabhupada explains, this is the purpose of our life, to undergo personal tribulation and austerity. For what purpose? To please Krishna. In other words, we should put Krishna in the center and do what is necessary to please him. This is a real test for the living entity, because we all tend to be so self-centered, and therefore we're in the material world. We do what is pleasing to us. But of course, that doesn't make us happy. It doesn't satisfy us, because we are Krishna's servant. It is forgetful. So we have to raise our consciousness. So, text 9 describes how the personality of Godhead, being very much satisfied with the penance of Lord Brahma, was pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha. So unless it was bhakti yoga, unless he was doing that penance, Brahmaji was performing the penance to please Krishna, why would the Lord have exhibited his own form and the Vaikuntha planets, his own abode? Because that is the process. Bhaktiyamam nabhijananti yavanyas tasmi tatvata. There is no other way to see the Lord. If Brahma was performing the austerities to merge into the Great One, then why would he have seen Vaikuntha? So he was not an impersonalist, certainly. The topmost person is not an impersonalist. He's a devotee. So because he was performing his activities for Krishna's pleasure, and Krishna was satisfied with that, the Lord manifested his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. So, who is pleased? Tasmai Svalokam Bhagavan Sabhajitaha. That the personality of Godhead, Tasmai unto him, unto Brahma, Bhagavan, the Lord, showed Brahma unto him, Svalokam, his own abode. Sva means his own. Lokam, his own abode. Sabhijitaha, being pleased by the penance of Brahma. So this is actually how we get to the spiritual world, is somehow or another we have to please Krishna. This is the art of Krishna consciousness. And what is pleasing to Krishna? Krishna explains in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Patram Puspam Palantoyam Yomam Bhaktya Payachati Taraham Bhakti Paritam Asnami. Asnami means I will accept what you give me, even if it is one leaf, one fruit, or some water. I will accept that when you offer it with devotion. I will take it, I will be pleased because of the devotion with which it is offered. So Brahma pleased Krishna by his devotion, and the Lord so kindly, out of his grace and mercy, showed Brahma his own abode and his own self. So in this, in the purport, Prabhupada, we'll read some of the purport here. First, Srila Sridhar Swami says, text 9 to 14, describe Vaikuntha, the supreme place. And Jiva Goswami says, this verse, until 19, the second part of 19, describes the Lord's manifestation. So we're going to hear what the Lord showed Brahma. But first we'll hear some of the purport. Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Jiva Goswami, in the comment of his Krama Sandarbha, annotation of Srimad Bhagavatam, that's Jiva Goswami's commentary on Bhagavatam, he cites quotations from the Garga Upanishad, Vedic evidence. It is said that Yajnavalkya described the transcendental abode of the Lord to Gargi, that's his wife, and that the abode of the Lord is situated above the highest planet of the universe, namely Brahmaloka. This abode of the Lord, although described in revealed scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, remains only a myth for the less intelligent class of men with a poor fund of knowledge. Hearing the word Svadristavibhi is very significant. One who has actually realized his self realizes the transcendental form of one's self. Impersonal realization of the self and the supreme is not complete because it is just an opposite conception of material personalities. The personality of Godhead and the personality of devotees of the Lord are all transcendental. They do not have material bodies. The material body is overcast with five kinds of miserable conditions, namely ignorance, material conception, attachment, hatred, and absorption. Absorption in Maya. These are ignorances. As long as one is overwhelmed by these five kinds of material miseries, there is no question of entering into the Vaikuntha Lokas. The impersonal conception of oneself is just the negation of material personality, and it is far from the positive existence of personal form. The personal forms of the transcendental abode will be explained in the following verses. Brahmaji also describes the highest planet of the Vaikuntha as Vaikuntha Loka, as Goloka Vrindavan, where the Lord resides as a cowherd boy keeping transcendental Sarabi cows and surrounded by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. So there is a whole transcendental abode, a spiritual world. And that abode, that spiritual world, there are different levels of that transcendental spiritual world. And that is the vast majority of existence. Vast majority of existence is the spiritual world. And those worlds are where we belong. So when we're not satisfied here with our material longings, with our material body, with our material mind, we think that if we get rid of those things, then we will be happy. We understand that the mind causes us so much trouble, so therefore if I stop thinking, I'll be peaceful. My senses cause me so much trouble. They're always making their demands. do this, buy this, taste that, hear this. So we think that if I don't have these senses, then I'll be happy. But that is the negation. It is like when my hand has gangrene or something. It's ill, it's diseased. So to cut it off, yes, it solves some problem, but it doesn't give me the use of my hand. So similarly, the impersonal conception is to rid ourselves of all characteristics because material characteristics are what cause us trouble. But yet, instead of getting rid of the hand because it gives us trouble, we should heal it. And then it has a wonderful use. So similarly, all the material aspects of the person, they have spiritual counterparts. So instead of ridding of all characteristics, rather our spiritual has to be invigorated. And that is the spiritual world, where everything exists in its perfection. So Brahmaji also describes the highest planet of Vaikuntha Loka as Goloka Vrindavan, where the Lord resides as a cowherd boy keeping transcendental Sarabi cows and surrounded by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Chintamani prakarasadmasu kalpa vriksha lakshavateshu sarabhi rabipalayantam lakshmi sahasra satasam brahmasevyamanam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. The statement of the Bhagavad Gita, yat gatva na navartante tadhama paramam mama, is also confirmed herein. Param means transcendental Brahman. Therefore, the abode of the Lord is also Brahman, none different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is known as Vaikuntha, and his abode is also known as Vaikuntha. Such Vaikuntha realization and worship can be made possible by transcendental form and senses. So in that verse, Bhagawan, the Lord, the one who possesses all bhaga or fortune, he reveals his abode. Now later on we will hear more about Bhagawan. Now in text 10, that abode that Lord Brahma saw and fully realized is described. But it's described in a negative way. What it is not like. Just like one can say what my chadar is not like, and one can say what my chadar is like. We can say it is not made out of silk. We can say it is not pink. It is not edible. It is not, what else isn't it?
Waterproof.
Yes. Neither waterproof nor gold. But also one can say what it is. It is purchased in Vrindavan. It is Mahaprasadam, actually, from Prabhupada's Murti in Vrindavan. We can say it is grayish in color. We can say it is made out of merino wool. We can say it has about 15 holes in it. And all these things are true. So on one side, there is the negative description of what it is, and on the other side, the positive description of what it is. So first, in text 10, the negative description of the spiritual world that the Lord showed to Brahma is described. In that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail. See, what's going on here in this verse, it is saying, it is making the difference by saying what the spiritual world isn't. It's making the difference between the spiritual world and the material world. But yet it has characteristics. All that exists in the material world, even though it's superficially similar to what exists in the spiritual world, it is not at all like it. Because the personal abode of the Lord, the modes of passion, ignorance do not prevail. Nor is there any of their influence of goodness in goodness. Nor is there any of their influence in goodness. There is no predominance of the influence of time. So we can't conceive, because our life is dictated by the pushing of the three modes of nature, either goodness, happiness, passion, desire, or ignorance, sleepiness. This is, we go from one to the other. Activity, satisfaction, sleepiness, madness, inertia, happiness, sleep. This is just the pushing of the three modes. Now what would happen if those modes weren't pushing? We can't even imagine what it would be like. What would happen if there was no time? There was neither past, nor present, nor future. We can't imagine what it would be like. If there is no time, there is no illusory external energy. Maya cannot enter that reason. Without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. That everyone is a devotee there. Pure, unalloyed devotee. So we can't really imagine what it is like in the spiritual world. Prabhupada explains in the purport. But it is, even though it has qualities, those qualities have nothing to do with the qualities that are in the material world. But it is wonderful. And Krishna is the center of that world. It is ecstatic. It is effulgent. There is no past. There is no present. There is no future. There are no modes of material nature. There is no maya. It's just ecstasy with Krishna in the center. Eternal existence. The kingdom of God, or the atmosphere of the Vaikuntha nature, which is called Tripad Vibhuti, is three times bigger than the material universe. And it is described here, universes, and it is described here, as also in the Bhagavad Gita, in a nutshell. In a small way, the spiritual world is described. This universe, containing billions of stars and planets, is one of the billions of such universes clustered together within the compass of the Mahatattva. All of these millions and billions of universes combined together constitute only 1/4 of the magnitude of the whole creation of the Lord. There is the spiritual sky also. Beyond the sky are the spiritual planets under the name of Vaikuntha, and all of them constitute 3/4 of the entire creation of the Lord. God's creations are always innumerable. Even the leaves of a tree cannot be counted by a man, nor can the hairs on his head. However, foolish men are puffed up with the idea of becoming God himself. When we look at this universe, we just look up at night on a cloudless night and see these stars. And we can just see some of the stars, countless numbers, and this is one universe. And then there are billions of universes. And how could anyone say that they're God and have forgotten? It doesn't make any sense. God is making it all, creating everything. And we are creating everything? How is that possible? Anyway, we may believe it, but we can't convince anyone else. So the sane however, foolish men are puffed up with the idea of becoming God himself, though unable to create a hair on their own bodies. Man may discover so many wonderful vehicles of journey, but even if he reaches the moon by his much advertised spacecraft, he cannot remain there. The sane man, therefore, without being puffed up as if he were God of the universe, abides by the instructions of the Vedic literature, the easiest way to acquire knowledge in transcendence. So let us know, through the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, of the nature and constitution of the transcendental world beyond the material sky. So there is no other way to understand the spiritual sky, the spiritual world, other than through Shastra, the scriptures. So Prabhupada is telling us that we should understand how tiny and insignificant we are, and we have no ability to understand unless we listen carefully to these descriptions. And then at the end of the purport,
the conclusion may be drawn that because of the complete absence of the mundane qualities of ignorance and passion, there is no question of creation nor of annihilation, and the duration of life between the creation and annihilation is in the material world everything is created and everything is annihilated, and the duration of life between the creation and annihilation is temporary. In the transcendental realm there is no creation and no destruction, and thus the duration of life is eternal, unlimitedly. In other words, everything in the transcendental world is everlasting, full of knowledge and bliss without deterioration. Since there is no deterioration, there is no past, present, and future in the estimation of time. The whole Vaikuntha existence proclaims that everyone there is a follower of the Lord. So this is the, just starting when now, this is practically speaking the first time in the Bhagavatam that we're getting a glimpse of what the spiritual world is like. We've heard about the potency of the Lord, how powerful He is in creating the material world. We've just heard about that. How He does that effortlessly. And now we're hearing that He's manifesting the spiritual world, which is even bigger and more wonderful than the material world. And that spiritual world contains none of the misery-causing elements that exist in the material world. The material world, the main problem is time, in the sense that time takes away the good things that we have. Time crushes them. Time awards death. Time awards our karma. Time awards our old age. And in the spiritual world, that doesn't exist. So naturally, what should be building up within us, after seeing how powerful the Lord is in creating the material world earlier in the second canto, what should be building up within us is this desire to go to Him, to go to His place, Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means the place where there is no anxiety. So if we want knowledge of the spiritual world, the way is from Shastra, from the Vedic literatures. And here we're going to now start hearing, for the first time more or less, what the spiritual world is like. Text 11. And remember, while we're hearing this, remember that these things sound like things in the material world, but actually they are spiritual in potency. They have nothing to do with the material world, and the material elements that resemble them are just dim reflections, while the reality exists there. So here's the beginning of the description of Vaikuntha. First, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Well, first, what we heard was that there is nothing resembling matter and the material influences in the spiritual world. But there are people there. But those people, we should remember when we're hearing these descriptions, the people, the things that we hear, even though they resemble that of the material world, but they are transcendental. They are composed of a different element, spiritual. Satchidananda, eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So the inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are described as having a glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. Their dress is of a yellowish color. And their bodily features are very attractive. They are just the age of growing youths. They all have four hands. They are all nicely decorated with pearl necklaces and ornamental medallions. And they all appear to be effulgent. Some of them
are effulgent like coral. What color is coral? Pinkish, right? Isn't it reddish? Reddish pink? Yes, different colors. Some are white. The Great Barrier Reef is white. Usually when they sell coral, I think it's reddish color, reddish pink. They're effulgent like coral, some of them. And diamonds in complexion, they're sparkling like diamonds and coral. And they have garlands on their heads, blooming like lotus flowers, and some wear earrings. So some of them, as Prabhupada explains in this purport, they have attained the liberation called sarupya. Sarupya means they have the same a form that resembles Krishna's or Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha. The Vaikuntha planets are also surrounded by various aeroplanes, but no diesel fuel is required and there's no crashes. They're all glowing and brilliantly situated. These aeroplanes belong to the great Mahatmas or devotees of the Lord. The ladies are as beautiful as lightning because of their celestial complexions, effulgent, golden color. And all these combined together appear like the sky decorated with both clouds and lightnings, because the lightning is the ladies of Vaikuntha and the clouds are the darkish blue devotees, other devotees. The goddess of fortune, now moving in closer, Krishna's the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Sahasra Satya Sambrahma Sevyamano. The goddess of fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet. And being moved by black bees, followers of spring, she is not only engaged in variegated pleasure services to the Lord along with her constant companions, but is also engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities. Now the Lord's close associates. Lord Brahma saw, so this is what the Lord revealed to Brahma. He actually saw this. The beautiful, effulgent, variegated spiritual world. The Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets, he saw the personality of Godhead and he saw the Lord himself, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community, the Lord of the goddess of fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe, and who is served by the foremost servitors like Nanda Sunanda Prabhala Arhana, his immediate associates. The personality of Godhead, seen leaning favorably towards his loving servitors, his very sight intoxicating and attractive. He appeared to be very much satisfied. He had a smiling face decorated with an enchanting reddish hue. He was dressed in yellow robes and wore earrings and a helmet on his head. He had four hands and his chest was marked with the lines of the goddess of fortune. So here is the first description of the Lord of Vaikuntha, of the spiritual world, very beautifully. And the first thing that is said, Vritya Prasada Abhimukam. This means he was leaning favorably towards his devotees. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also describes this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by saying, Aishwarya Madhurya Karune Sarupa Purnata Bhakti Vatsalya Atma Parjanta Vadanyata. That the Lord is full of Aishwarya, such opulence. Aishwarya Madhurya, sweetness and mercifulness. Sarupa Purnata, his very existence, his nature, his swarup, his form is composed of this, of mercy and opulence. and sweetness. But Bhakti Vatsalya, that he serves his devotees, that he leans towards his devotees, this is the most endearing quality of the Lord. He even Atma Parjanta Vidanyata, he is so magnanimous, he is so merciful that he gives himself to his devotees. He's always leaning towards the devotees, inclined towards his devotees. So this quality is so wonderful. All his qualities are wonderful. So this Prabhupada explains in his purport that this is a description of Yogapit. In the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, there is a full description of Yogapita, or the particular place where the Lord is in audience to his eternal devotees, where the Lord meets with his devotees, is called the Yogapit. In that Yogapit, the personifications of religion, knowledge, opulence, and renunciation are all seated at the lotus feet of the Lord. The four Vedas, namely the Riksama, Yajur, and Atharva, are present there personally to advise the Lord. The 16 energies headed by Chanda are all present there. Chanda and Kamuda are the first two doorkeepers, and at the middle door are the doorkeepers named Bhadra and Subhadra, and at the last door are Jai and Vijay. There are other doorkeepers also named Kamuda, Kamudaka, Pundarik, Vaman, Sankukana, Shankukana, Savanetra, Sumuka. The Lord's place, palace, is well decorated and protected by the above mentioned doorkeepers. So in other words, all opulence is there. All the energies serve the Lord. There is no loss. It is all wonderful. And again, this is described to us to attract us to this wonderful place and away from this horrible place where Dukkalayam Ashashvatam, it is full of misery. The Lord, 18. The Lord is all powerful. The Lord was seated on his throne and was surrounded by different energies, like the four, the 16, the five, and the six natural opulences, along with other insignificant energies of temporary character. But he was the factual Supreme Lord enjoying his own abode. So Prabhupada explains in the second half of the purport. Because this verse, in the purport, Prabhupada explains in the beginning, the Lord is naturally endowed with his six opulences, specifically because he is Bhagavan. He has all opulence, and all energies, all potencies are serving him. So this is Bhagavan. So let's hear something about this Bhagavan Lord on the tape, please.
Terms of Krishna, he is mentioned Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavan, this word I have explained many times. Bhagavan means opulence or fortune. From the Bhava, the word Bhagya has come. One who is very fortunate person, he is called Bhagavan. Nothing is Bhava. So Bhava means opulence. And Bhagavan means one who possesses opulence. So Krishna possesses all the opulences, six opulences. All strength, all influence, all beauty, all knowledge, everything complete. So Bhagavan means one who has got complete opulence, six opulences, incomplete, purna, purna vidam, purna bhagavan. That is Bhagavan. That is Bhagavan. There are so many rascals who come as incarnation of God, Bhagavan. But you have to taste to whether all the opulences are complete there. Vaisajyasa samagrasa. First thing is riches. So whether one has got all the riches, then you know. And what you can say that I have got all the riches. I may have something more than your riches, but I cannot say that all the riches. So if you find out somebody like you and me, and if he possesses all the riches, all strength, all influence, all knowledge, all beauty, then he is Bhagavan. That's Vishnu Padmasi. There is no comparison of Krishna's opulences. And several times in the example, say, in the human society, there is marriage. So, Krishna married 16,800 wives. And for each wife, a palace, marble palace, bedecked with jewels, and furniture made of ivory and gold, and bed and curtains, they are all made of silk. So, not only palace, but also garden attached to the palace. And the flower tree is Parijat flower. The Parijat flower was brought from the hill. This Parijat flower is not visible in this world. From heavenly planet, Krishna brought it. His wife, Sottamaha, he requested, both of them, Sottamaha and Krishna went to the heavenly planet. So, generally, women, they are for something. So, he requested the husband, Krishna, I want this flower. All right. So, he gave her one flower, and so he also told, why the flower? I said, take the tree, so that you get flower daily. So, when he was doing so, Indra came. Indra is the king of heavenly planet. No, sir, you cannot do that. You cannot take this tree to the heavenly, this is lower planet. No, I cannot do that. So Krishna said, no, my wife wants it, I must. That is Vishnu. How he is complete, just like a helpmate husband to satisfy the wife in every respect. When he plays the part of a child before Mother Yashoda, he plays everything perfectly. When he plays the husband, he doesn't require any wife or mother, he is supreme. But when he plays the part of a husband, he plays it perfectly. The wife may think that how much my husband is attached to me, so she remains very well satisfied. Krishna is not attached to anyone. But that is Krishna's super excellence. That although he had to satisfy 16,108 wives, everyone was satisfied. Everyone is thinking Thus Krishna is very much attached to me than in the other side. This is Krishna's life. Therefore Bhagavan, full practice, any field of fighting, opulence, household life, renounced life also. If you study the life of Krishna, you find anything is complete.
So Jiva Goswami says, comments on this verse, how the Lord was sitting surrounded by all his energies. He comments that the Lord is all powerful because he is not dependent on anyone in any way, because no one can have more opulence or power than the Lord. So Krishna gives the living entities some opulence, some power. And Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport, out of his immensely charitable disposition, he can award some temporary powers to the yogis because of the yogis' hankering after them. But to his unalloyed devotees, who do not want anything from the Lord save and accept his transcendental service, the Lord is so pleased that he gives himself in exchange for unalloyed service. Then the next verse. So Lord Brahma, remember, Lord Brahma was, he performed tapasya, austerity, and then the Lord was pleased and showed him Vaikuntha. And this is what Lord Brahma is seeing. He's seeing this wonderful realm where there is no influence of the material energy. He's seeing the residents of Vaikuntha with their effulgent complexions like diamonds and coral. He's seeing the flower, the aeroplanes, the Viman. All opulences serving the Lord. He's seeing this by Krishna's mercy. And then in 18, describes his reaction. Now, what did Lord Brahma do? So Lord Brahma, thus seeing the personality of Godhead in his fullness, was overwhelmed with joy within his heart. And thus, in full transcendental love and ecstasy, his eyes filled with tears of love, he thus bowed down before the Lord. That is the way of the highest perfection for the living being, the Paramhamsas. Now, in the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada explains that anyone through bhakti yoga can see the Lord. But, and there's a but one has to give up his malice. Malice means enviousness. Enviousness means jealousy. And we have to give up our envious mentality because everything in the spiritual world is centered around Krishna. And if we have any envy, we cannot tolerate that everything is centered around Krishna. If we have malice, we cannot tolerate that. So therefore we cannot be in the spiritual world. So to see the spiritual world, which everything again is centered around Krishna, we have to be free from that one quality, matsarja, enviousness, which is the sum total of all bad qualities. Prabhupada explains in the purport. That's what Prabhupada explains this in the beginning of the purport and then the last part of the purport. He says, following in the footsteps of Lord Brahma, any person, even up to this day, can attain the same perfection by following the path of the Paramhamsas as recommended herein. Lord Chaitanya also approved of this method of self-realization for men in this age. One should first, with all conviction, believe in the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And without making efforts to realize him by speculative philosophy, one should prefer to hear about him from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita and later from the text of the Srimad Bhagavatam. One should hear such discourses from a person Bhagavatam and not from the professional man or from the karmis, gyanis, or yogis. That is the secret of learning the science. One does not need to be in the renounced order of life. He can remain in his present condition of life, but he must search out the association of a bona fide devotee of the Lord and hear from him the transcendental message of the Lord with faith and conviction. That is the path of the Paramhamsa recommended herein. Amongst various holy names of the Lord, the Lord is also called Ajita, or one who can never be conquered by anyone else. Yet, he can be conquered by the Paramhamsa path, as practically realized and shown by the great spiritual master, Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma has personally recommended this Paramhamsa Panta in his own words as follows. Jnani prayasam udapastanamante eva jivanti sam mukaritam bhavadiyavartam stane stita shutagatam tanovan manobir ye prayaso jita jito pyasitais trilokyam. Lord Brahma said, O my Lord Krishna, a devotee who abandons the path of empiric philosophical speculation, aiming at merging in the existence of the Supreme, and engages himself in hearing your glories and activities from a bona fide sadhu or saint, and who lives an honest life in the occupational engagement of his social life, can conquer your sympathy and mercy, even though you are ajita, or unconquerable. From the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. That is the path of the Paramhamsas, which was personally followed by Lord Brahma and later recommended by him for attaining perfect success in life. So what does that mean? It means that one should develop his loving devotion for Krishna, and that is the path of the Paramhamsas. And how to do that? By hearing. Because by hearing properly, then ye prayaso jita jito pyasitas trilokyam. That Lord who is unconquerable becomes conquered and inclined to give that devotee who is so serious about hearing about him, he becomes inclined to give him his full mercy. One should stay. Mahaprabhu, really, he appreciated this verse when spoken to him by Sri Ramananda Roy, that you should hear about Krishna. We should hear about Krishna and hear about Krishna and have our consciousness saturated like a sponge gets saturated with colored water. We should become saturated, our consciousness should be saturated by Krishna Katha, hearing about Krishna. And then the unconquerable Lord, no one can force their way into Vaikuntha. But when one gets the grace of the Lord, the mercy of the Lord, then one can easily enter, as Brahma easily entered, by the Lord's mercy. And this is the Paramhamsa Panta. And in the next verse, Srila Sridhar Swami comments that this verse shows how kind the Lord is to his devotees. So if we make our humble attempt, which may be so full of faults, which will be full of faults, but Krishna's kindness can make that up if we follow the path of the great saints. So here is the verse, the last verse we'll read this evening. After seeing, so Brahma, after seeing the Lord, was so ecstatic. His heart was melting out of love. His eyes were full of tears. He bowed down to the Lord. So this was after finally seeing the Lord performing. He performed tapasya for 1,000 celestial years. That means for millions of years. He finally saw the spiritual world. Then he finally saw the Lord. He fell down with tears flowing from his eyes. And how did the Lord reciprocate with seeing Brahma? So after seeing Brahma present before him, the Lord accepted him as worthy to create living beings to be controlled as he desired. Worthy to be controlled. This was the goal. To be a suitable instrument of the Lord, to be controlled as Krishna's desired. He was so qualified, not that he became the Lord, but he became his qualifications allowed him to serve the Lord, to be controlled as the Lord desired. And thus, being much satisfied with Brahma, the Lord shook hands with Brahma and, slightly smiling, addressed him thus. So tomorrow we'll hear what the Lord said. We'll read just the last half of the purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport. Brahma does his duty very perfectly, not only by generating the living entities, but also by spreading his party for reclaiming the fallen souls. The party is called the Brahma Sampradaya, and any member of this party to date is naturally engaged in reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead, back home. The Lord is very much anxious to get back his parts and parcels, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. No one is more dear than the one who takes the task of reclaiming the fallen souls back to Godhead. There are many renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya whose only business is to make men more forgetful of the Lord and thus entangle them more and more in material existence. Such persons are never dear to the Lord, and the Lord sends them deeper into the darkest region of matter so that such envious demons may not be able to know the Supreme Lord. That's from the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Tanaham jishata krodham samsirishanarandamana. But anyone, however, preaching the mission of the Lord in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya is always dear to the Lord. And the Lord, being satisfied with such a preacher of the authorized bhakti cult, shakes hands with him in great satisfaction. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai, Maharaj Kuntanath ki jai. This is, in the beginning, we have to make our endeavor. But it's like, how to describe it? It's like running to catch the bus. And then there's a man on the bus, and you're running and running, you're making your endeavor, but then the man on the bus sees your endeavor, and he grabs you and pulls you aboard, and then, you're not going at your own speed anymore. So this is what this level is. To actually see Krishna, to come to the point even of bhava bhakti, is descending. And then, at that time, one actually becomes a devotee. We're trying to catch the Lord, but we cannot catch him. But when he catches us, when he sees our endeavor and our sincerity, and when he is pleased, and when his sweet and free will desires, then we attain the shelter of the spiritual energy, his service. Does that answer what you were saying? So there's the combination, but ultimately it's only mercy. It's not our endeavor. Our endeavor must be there, but ultimately it's mercy, descending mercy. There's nothing Brahma could have done. He performed his austerities, but when the Lord was pleased to him, whenever he was pleased, he was pleased by his own sweet will. He's independent. So it's like that. I already answered two of your questions. in a language only known to the both of us. But why? Because that was the Lord's desire for him.
But is it not that it says that when a living entity falls, first becomes as Lord Brahma?
It sometimes says that.
And also says that when one performs the 100 birth perfectly born national system, and he gets the answer to become a Brahma. And there are only three processes to become a Brahma, or sometimes Lord himself takes the birth of Brahma to get anyone else. So, one of them.
So if the Lord himself will take that position, so how important is that position? So it's so important. Why is it important? Because it's a position of great service and responsibility. And what is the service and responsibility? To make the material universe. And why is that such a great service and responsibility? There's two reasons. One is to give the conditioned souls a place where they can exhibit their illusory tendencies. But the other and more important one is to give those devotees who are not yet mature a place to so that they can mature and come to the level of prema bhakti. So the Lord takes a living entity who is qualified, and he inspires him with that desire. So whose desire is it? You can't say that it's just the Lord's in one sense, because it's that living entity's, the qualified living entity, to have that desire, but it's also the Lord's desire. It's, the Lord wants it to occur so that the living entities can advance in their Krishna consciousness. So this kind of exalted living entity, practically the most pious living entity in the universe. That's who Lord Brahma is. So pious that sometimes the position is there's no one in the whole universe who's pious enough to do it, because you have to be so pure. Is that okay?
So can we call him in fact absolutely that he is a pure devotee? In a sense,
Lord Brahma? He's also the head of the Sampradaya. He's heard directly from the Lord. He got initiation from the Lord.
But still appears that he has some desire to. Of course, it is Lord's desire also, but so, there is no balance, not to desire.
But his desire is to please the Lord. It is so. That's his desire. Otherwise, how would he have been able to see Vaikuntha? Just if he wanted to create, there are so many people who want to create, but they don't get to see Vaikuntha. So he was so pure in bhakti. So that means that, what does that mean? It means that Krishna has inspired that desire in him. But he's qualified. He has just the right qualification. And if he, it's clear that he's pure. He's also the head of the Sampradaya. He's the spiritual master of Narada. Did you have
a... I was wondering if you could explain what Srila Prabhupada means in the third book to verse 9, where he says, executing Bhakti Yoga is exactly like sitting on a lotus sprouted out of the abdomen of the transcendental personality of God.
It doesn't feel like that to you? Turn on the light. Small chapter 9. Where is it? It's quite a long purport. Where is it? Second paragraph. What's the beginning of the paragraph? Executing Bhakti Yoga. Oh, I see. I had it. It was covered by a post-it. Executing Bhakti Yoga is exactly like sitting on the lotus sprouted out of the abdomen of the Transcendental Personality of Godhead, because Lord Brahma was seated there. Brahmaji was able to please the Lord. Lord was also pleased to show Brahmaji his personal abode. In other words, it seems like it means that Brahma, from his seat on the lotus flower, could please the Lord. So any living entity who, even though he may not be sitting upon a lotus flower, by performing bhakti yoga, it's the same as Brahma sitting on the lotus flower, that he can please the Lord. That's the simple way that I would explain it. So we become seated, situated within bhakti yoga, and then we can attain the same success of going to the spiritual world as Lord Brahma did. That's how I would explain that. But in some ways, it's not exactly the same. But in that sense, it's the same. We can think of more reasons too, if you want them. That as the lotus flower came directly from the Lord, similarly, bhakti yoga is the energy of the Lord. It's Krishna's ladini sambit shakti. So that is also, the energy comes from the energetic. So when we're seated within, or situated within bhakti yoga, it is in that sense similar to the lotus flower. And also in one, the third way, is when one is like a lotus. No, I don't like the third way. Two's enough. Mm-hmm. Any other? Okay.
Is it personal? Is that only the two, really?
Huh?
It's a personal thing.
You wanna?
It's a personal thing.
What's a personal thing?
The relationship between Lord Brahma and the Lord.
Yeah.
At that time, and so with Holy, it's a personal relationship.
Oh, that connects directly like that. This was another.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure. And the devotee, as situated, is sitting on something, means it's maintaining you and supporting you. So similarly, the devotee is maintained and supported by Krishna's bhakti yoga. Yeah.
What does it mean that there are many renegades from the Brahma Sampradaya?
You like that one, eh? Not cool. Got a laugh out of you. What's the next line?
Whose only business is to make men more forgetful of the Lord. And thus entangle.
So those who do not take shelter of the Sampradaya, who are materialists, and their only business is to make people more forgetful of the Lord. So they're envious. They're demons. That's all. It's really just talking about those who are non-devotees, basically. I don't think, because if someone, certainly, it's not just the Brahma Sampradaya, because there are three other Sampradayas too. So,
Prabhupada's only using that because
he's talking about Brahma Sampradaya. So he's really defining. Those who do not take shelter of Krishna through a bona fide sampradaya, their business in the grossest ways or even in subtle ways, is to make people more forgetful of the Lord.
It's just an embellishment.
Yeah, it seems. And but the people who Krishna is referring to in that verse in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is those who are specifically very envious of Krishna. Tanaham dvishata kronan samsareshana chipramada samasaram asareshe vayonashu. I put them again and again into demonic wombs so that they go downward and downward into animal species forever, practically speaking.